Welcome to this month's edition of the Light on Conspiracy newsletter. This month I have the immense pleasure of welcoming no one less than Chip Tatum, who's a man with an absolute incredible background. He's going to tell us more about that, but I can just say that he's been an... I know he's been a Vietnam Special Forces Air Force Air Combat Controller, a U.S. Army pilot flying classified missions during the U.S. invasion of Grenada, among many other things. He was part of the Iran-Contra as a pilot. He's got 25 years as a deep cover agent for the CIA. He's been a black op assassin and also a member of the ultra-secret Pegasus hit team, which, since most of you know that I spent some 30 years looking into different teams of assassins over the last many decades, that this is one area that has great interest to me. So without further introduction, I would just say thank you so, so much, Chip, for taking the time to talk to us, and I just want to welcome you.
Well, thanks. Pleasure to be here with you.
So
back from the grave.
Back from the graves, exactly, because the thing is that I followed you for years, and I the first edition of my book, Coup d'etat in Slow Motion, I put as a last chapter the Tatum Chronicles, written by David Goyat. And at that point, I think this was it was around 1999, and I think it was just a year before that you more or less disappeared, and most of us thought that both you and your wife had been taken out due to all this knowledge that you were sitting on, and the powerful forces that you were challenging or having a lot of knowledge about. So no, I tell you, I was so relieved and so happy when suddenly you just popped out of absolute nowhere. And apparently now you're telling me that you spent some time in South America during these years. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can.
Yeah, we own some property in South America. Nancy and I did, and some. I don't know if many of you are aware, but when someone goes to try to take over your land in other countries, if they homestead on your land for three to 5 years, then they could claim title to the land. I was currently serving probation, federal probation. I asked the judge permission to go get the settlers off my land, and he said no, so I went anyhow. And since I had violated probation and there was going to be a jail term, I just figured I'd just stay.
Well, I would say that's pretty good thinking.
Yeah.
So
they knew where I was, and apparently that story came out. My son called me and said, "Dad, are you okay?" I said, "Yeah, I'm okay." And he said, "Well, there's a story on the internet that you were killed in Panama and your body washed up, face torn off." I said, "No, I assure you, Lee, I'm fine." And as I look back to see who I think might have done it, before I left, there were several journalists pushing me very, very hard to release all of my all of the insurance documents. And they said that it's my responsibility to show it to the world. I told them, "I've shown you guys enough, and with what I've shown you, you haven't done anything. Yeah. So why would I risk my life or the life of my family for you?" And I believe that they tried they instrumented my death just to try to get those documents released. But the agreement with my people are, you know, if they don't hear from me at a certain date each year, they can release them. If they hear from me, they're to keep them. Mm. So.
Chip, would you mind just describing your background? I know, I mean, you've been through so much, many things, so maybe just a quick rerun where your background, where you come from, and so on. So it's easier for people who are not so aware of who you are to get a better picture of that.
Well, in late 69, 1970, I went into the Air Force, the United States Air Force, as a combat controller. I was sent to Southeast Asia, and there we went on a few special missions. In those special missions, we were I was assigned to a particular special forces unit run by the CIA, and we were detained. And when we were liberated by a Marine recon patrol, We were placed under the control, those of us left alive, under the control of the CIA. So from 1971, 72 era, all the way through 1986 in the military, all of my assignments were controlled and directed by either the CIA or the DIA. The DIA folks is the Defense Intelligence Agency. Those are the guys who actually run most of the assassination teams that you hear about. They run Delta Force, really the SEALs, everyone. Defense Intelligence Agency has their fingers in quite a bit more than most of us know. After 1986, I left military service, and I went to work directly for the National Security Council in what's called the Terrorist Incident Working Groups. And in those Terrorist Incident Working Groups, we have several subgroups, and those subgroups are called operational subgroups. We were split into different taskings and different units by taskings. My particular forte was being able to fly and get into anywhere under radar without being detected. So I had my teams, and depending on the tasking and depending on the mission, I would be tasked to take four special units into certain countries, drop them off, and bring them out. Whether they were assassination squads, geek squads, or whatever, that was my job. In that time, I think we had 17 international assassinations under those taskings, and then several other normal intimidation missions.
Do you know, one thing that's always been very curious to me is to understand. I mean, I've studied so many of these events in great detail, and many of the people that you actually know are names that have followed me for like 30 years. But the thing is that I've always had a big question mark on how people in this area see themselves and what they carry out, how they if they see themselves as freedom fighters or just soldiers or just mechanics, or how would you describe it, who have seen it from the inside?
The men working for me, I've seen several different. I see the straight assassins, the killers, who have no heart or just cold-blooded killers. I've seen mercenaries who are there only for the money. I've seen those feeling that they're doing it to help democracy and for their country. You see the gamut. Mostly the ones who are feeling they're doing it for the country are the younger ones who haven't been around too long. Once they've been in the business for a while, they start realizing it's not really what it seems. So, and that was my case. When I first went into the Air Force, I was there to uphold and defend my country. And then years later, I had no doubt that we weren't there to defend anything. We were there strictly for business, for growing the desires of others.
But
Primarily greed.
yeah, because the way I see it, I mean, the people running the show are absolute super criminals, and these are the people that you have been part of enforcing. At what stage did you become aware of that, and when you did it, were there any thoughts of getting out, or was it too late? Were you too deeply involved? Or because I mean, you must. After taking part of operations like this, you might guess yourself into such a spider web that was very hard to release yourself from.
Well, I got tangled in it right at the beginning with Operation Red Rock, a false flag type operation of the United States
In Thailand, yeah.
performed against our ally in Cambodia. The Cambodian premier was sitting on the fence, and Nixon felt for us to get out of Vietnam, we needed the Cambodians to get involved with the South Vietnamese against the North Vietnamese, and they needed Laotians involved. So there were several missions under Operation Phoenix and other programs where we would go in and we would intimidate the villagers and everyone to fight against the Viet Cong, fight against any rebel forces. But this particular mission, we went in and we blew up the Phnom Penh Airport, which was Lon Nol's pride and joy. But the difference of just going in and blowing it up is We went in with North Vietnamese uniforms and left actual North Vietnamese bodies around the airfield after we as we blew it up. When we were leaving, there was an assassination attempt by the Montagnards, the people assigned to get us out of there, and that's when we knew that we were destined not to return, that it was a suicide mission. And from that day on, I realized that things weren't really as they appear. And the person who briefed the mission initially was a man we called Ambassador Colby. He later became the director of Central Intelligence, Bill Colby, and he took me under his wing and watched out for me. And when he left in 78, he told me, "Chip, you need to think about getting out of the business." He said, "I can help you now, but I won't be able to help you later because I'm leaving." So he did help me. I got out and I went to the mountains of Colorado to live with my young family. I just married and had a son. And we were living up there, and some fellas came into my delicatessen in a ski area one day and said, "Tatum?" I said, "Yep." They said, "Uncle Sam needs you. You're going back to work." And they sent me to Fort Rucker, Alabama to start flying helicopters, special helicopters. And we were sent to a place called Fort Campbell, Kentucky, where they were forming the 160th Aviation Night Stalkers, which are the same unit that you saw the real strange helicopter in the Bin Laden raid. I was a participant in that unit from 80 through 86, flying special ops missions around the world.
How do you see a man like Bill Colby? I mean, this is a man who's been involved in so many, well, I would say quite awful, a lot of awful stuff. But I know that he saw himself as a man of honor, at least that's what he said, and that he did it this for a bigger cause and so on. But what was your impression of this man? And also, I mean, he was taken out in the end.
Well, look, he was there in World War II in the OSS when intelligence was intelligence. But before all, I mean, there was sneaky snake stuff going on back then, but nothing like anymore. And the job and the duties of the OSS were quite different than when the CIA came in, and when they felt duty born to get rid of communism, which they failed in every turn in what they tried to do, and taking over presidents, taking over countries, kicking presidents out, putting in new presidents. Those new presidents always failed and were kicked out of office or killed. So, he was involved through seven, well, as DCI through 78, and after that, along with the National Security Council and very private entities. And I think he got so deep. I mean, he told me that I would never be able to leave. He's the one who explained it to me. He knew, and you don't. You just have to accept it, or you have to go jump off a 15-story building, one of the two. Those are about your only choices. I'm lucky that he took me under wing early, and he helped me in gathering a lot of my insurance policy. He said, "It's too late for me, but I can at least help you." So, and he did.
Did you see him as a friend?
Oh yeah.
Well,
Yeah.
I'm happy to hear that.
But he was a bad apple, I'll tell you that now. He's no one I would have ever crossed.
No, I can understand that. But I mean, you've been in touch with so many of these so super central figures in the Iran, the whole Iran-Contras scandal and operation and so on. Felix Rodriguez, Oliver North, Barry Seals. I mean, these names that are just, they pop up everywhere. And once again here, and George Bush Senior, which is a man that has always been a massive mystery to me, because he looks very charming and nice, but when you see his actions, it's absolutely horrendous. And I get an impression that when you see over the years, he was the one that got into the center and then started eliminating people everywhere around him to get to the power position he is now. And I don't know if that is a correct interpretation.
No, it absolutely is. You know, and he's one of the most intelligent men I've ever met, but he's also one of the most evil men I've ever met. He holds no qualms at taking out a whole family. You know, no witnesses, nothing at all. He holds no qualms that if he wants someone to do something for him, he'll go after the children of that person to make sure that he performs. No soul at all. No soul at all. You know, and the only reason I'm able to talk about a lot of this is because when I was charged with treason, I took my case before the judge, and there's a thing called the Classified Information Procedures Act in the United States, and anyone having classified information that they want to use in their trial or in their court case has to bring it to the judge, and the judge decides. He doesn't allow the CIA or the DIA or intelligence entities or military entities to decide whether this information can be used or not used, or whether it's classified or not classified. He makes that decision. And if he decides that it's classified, then he has to clear the court. He has to get everyone involved in the justice system in that particular court case, high security clearances. So they were looking at years, at the best, of getting everyone involved security clearances in my particular case. So he just came out and said, I find that this information, and we presented everything out there. We laid out the whole Iran-Contra, everybody involved in it, and what we did. And he said, well, I'm going to find that this isn't classified. It should be in the public domain.
That is quite
But you
amazing.
can't but you can't use it in your defense. So they ended up dropping the treason charge. When they dropped the cheap treason charge, that's why I couldn't use it in my defense. So.
But do you know, I was in Iran during the Iraq war. Just as I was on a bicycle from Sweden going to South Africa, and I took a wrong turn and I ended up in Iran, later helping to
Yeah,
smuggle.
those road signs are pretty bad, aren't they?
I couldn't understand the writing on the wall. No, anyway, I ended up there helping to smuggle some people out there. But one of the things, I haven't the ba same background as you. I've never seen violence that close or in any way like that. But what I did see was the Pasdaran, the Revolutionary Guards in Iran. Some of them that I knew, one of them were a brother to one of the friends I got down there, and I knew some of the things he had been into. And when I looked in his eyes, it was very hard for me to grasp, because it wasn't evil. It was just like there was no light. There was the empathy, the compassion, that there was nothing like that. How do you've seen a lot more of these things than I have. So how would
Yeah,
you do?
I call them dead eyes because there's just nothing there.
There's nothing there.
There's nothing there, right? That's the only way I know it. And even in my nightmares, I see that. That's the one thing I see that'll hold me in my bed. I can't move, and it's I
Oof.
see these dead eyes hovering over me, just looking at me. And you know, it's tough to take.
That sounds really scary to me. Because when I met these people, and I knew, for instance, this man, he was the bodyguard of one of the prime way up politicians, and I knew that his way up there was there was a lot of torture, that he had executed people, that he had been he they he, they were sent to the front on, you know, all the time, on off, on off, on off. But when I saw him, he had a photo album, and in this photo album there were photos of all his comrades, from the war and so on, with there were crosses all over the place because most of them were dead. When he was looking at these photos, that's where the feeling came, because otherwise he was just like, are there hope for people like that, or are they lost?
Well, I don't think their eyes will ever recover, but their soul certainly can.
Their
It's
soul
like
can.
they've lost everything, everything there. The emotion The emotion, even though they have emotion, is very restricted in what emotion they can finally retrieve. You know, only because of the experiences. The experience, oh, they never go away. They're always there, and that's what takes it away from you.
Oof. This is a scary area, I think. But a person, I hope it's okay if we go, if I ask these personal questions. A person like George Bush Senior, when you look into his eyes, what was the feeling? What is that, dead eyes as well, or is it something else?
Cold. He has cold eyes. Just glares right through you. He has no feelings. There are no emotions in him.
And
That's all you get out of him.
well, when you take
You can't read him. You can't tell anything about him. You just know that if you cross him, you're
your dead meat. Yeah. Listen, a guy like Barry Seals, the one of the, I mean, he came from Operation 40 and then worked his way into the Iran-Contras and so on. I get a totally different feeling from a person like that. Is that
But he's never pulled a trigger. The only thing he does, he's just flown the aircraft.
Yeah.
That was his forte. That's what he does, and what goes on back behind him, in the aircraft is no big deal. His job is to sneak in and sneak out and collect the money. That when you're not directly involved with the deaths, with the torture, the maiming of others, you can just let it pass.
Yeah.
You're aware of it, but your direct involvement isn't there. And Barry was a very jovial person. He always joked around, and he hid a lot of his inner feelings by that joking.
Yeah. Can I ask you, Operation 40, as far as I've been able to find out, Operation 40 is sort of the grandmother of all operations, the basic source that these assassins started coming from, developing out from. Is that a correct way of seeing it?
Well, to be honest, Operation 40 was way before me. I
Yeah.
mean, that was like in the Eisenhower days and all that, but everything evolves.
Yeah.
And so Operation 40 is at this level, and they say, well, if we could do this, look, how can we improve upon this? And
Yeah.
then we evolve into something else, and we evolve, and just a and
It's
from
just.
where I was involved with Pegasus and with the OSGs. I've talked to friends, and the way it's evolved is absolutely amazing with technology and everything that we have today. Wish I'd had a lot of that back then.
Yeah. But I mean, many of the members that came from Operation 40 were active for decades and decades and are popping up all over the place when you look at these historical events.
Yeah, you have Ted Shackley, one of the big ones back out of there. And he continued all the way through. So.
Yeah, David Attlee Phillips, Howard Hunt. I mean, you
Right.
got David Morales. I mean, there's so many of them that were involved both in the JFK and the Robert Kennedy, and some of them Martin Luther King, and I mean, all the way up
George Bush.
George Bush.
George Bush.
I mean, he was the paymaster for Operation 40. There's some witnesses that claim that he was in the Deltex building when the shots were fired, that the shooter was Chucky Nicoletti, but that he was actually there present in that.
I've seen photos claiming that it was Bush, and if it isn't, it's an awful good likelihood
It sure is.
likeness of him.
Yeah.
But he was in Vietnam. As a lieutenant, he was on the ground over there working for the CIA. So he was around for a long time. That's what got him his in for director of the CIA for the short time he was there.
Yeah. Chip, can I ask you two names that have popped up lately as some very serious members of a cleanup team that has also, it's claimed to have been worked for decades. Are these names that you recognize? Walter Tobinski, Clyde Forshaw?
No,
No? Okay.
neither one.
Super.
But however, the people that I dealt with, I rarely dealt in their real names. I have many aliases.
Yeah.
Pictures tell me a lot.
Yeah. No, one of
So.
them, Walter Tobinski, is the guy who came out from the Cuban embassy in Mexico City, and was they were taking photo of him. if you know these photos.
You were there.
I was not.
No.
I was
No,
not.
I really don't know those photos, no.
Okay.
But if you send me a copy of them, I'll take a look at it and let you know if I know them.
Excellent. Listen, the way I mean, we so many things has happened over the years, and the world now is in a quite a challenging situation, to say the least, with this whole New World Order agenda and all of these. How do you see the situation now and the way forward? How to deal with it?
Well, everyone's saying that they're far off from getting anything done. From where I came from living down in South America for the last 10 years and coming up here, I see that the United States has already gone down the tubes, just from what I've seen. There's a lot of camouflage going on by the government here, trying to make things better, but it isn't. We're in the area that I live in, Florida. One out of every, or about 3 out of every 10 houses are in foreclosure, are foreclosed, and many more are still coming up on foreclosure. People don't have work. Crime is rising. Prostitution in the streets getting rampant because people can't pay their bills. The drugs everywhere. And the big move from cocaine in the United States to heroin, or from because cocaine is much more. A lot more expensive in Europe. What they're doing now is the, and there's so much interdiction coming to the United States that they're just bringing the higher cost heroin in here that replace the pills, the opiate pills, and people are moving in that direction and into meth. So all the drugs, the poverty, and the unemployment growing constantly. It's here. It's here. There's no doubt. What they had planned initially to separate the masses is here now. Now all they have to do is bring it in line on the world platform, and they're there. However, I don't think that they counted on Russia growing again and Putin becoming so strong. I think that's a cog in the works for them right there.
I tell you what I see is that I see an incredible awakening at the same time. It's like the dark and the light is really racing each other, and even though there's a lot of dark things going on, there's also, when I compare over the 30 years that I've been involved in this, there's the last 5, 6 years, it's just like exploding everywhere, at least here in Europe and so on, the awareness of what is going on. Is that something you see as well?
I saw that in South America, yes. Here, I don't see a lot of people. I see some becoming aware. However, I have kinship and friends with others in the military and in the intelligence community, and they're kicking back against things. So the old cabal, the old corporation, and those in charge before are getting a lot of resistance, and they're very, very active resistive communities right now, causing them a lot of problems. So I see that going on right here, right now.
I also feel that they've speeded up the agenda. They used to work very carefully with like a stepping stone mentality, but now it's just full force ahead. And I think that could be also because this awakening is going on, that they need to move forward as soon as possible to try and close us in.
But the problem with that is when you make a rash decision, you make mistakes. Because even when we were going slowly, they'd send us out to do a mission to align someone, and we'd get them, and we'd go out and we'd intimidate them into doing something, but the end result didn't result in what exactly that they wanted, so we had to go back in again and do someone else or do something here. And so, and that's the slow method, and that took years for them to start seeing results from. And now they're into going quickly and even making more errors. So they've got challenges in front of them if they think they're going to be successful.
Exactly, and that's why I see, I mean, with all these black operations, these mass shootings, and I mean, it's getting so sloppy. I
Yeah.
think in the old days there were good budgets, good planning for these false flag operations or psyops, but now it's just like ridiculous. I mean,
Well, and And good operators, good mechanics.
Yeah.
Now they're just,
They just pick anyone. And
that's right.
this whole thing with now that they're using actors as well, is there a reason, the way you see it, why they keep it to such a close, small group, that they're even using the same actors in different operations?
Security, you know, it's easier to control a small group than
Yeah.
it is
But these
the huge
people,
communities.
how do you think these people are controlled? The people that are taking part of these operations. What I'm asking is how these
In
so-called
the same way we
actors.
did, you have those with you can control with money, you have those you have to control with intimidation. So I don't believe their tactics have changed any. I think it's they try to buy them out. If they can't buy them out, they use intimidation. If the intimidation doesn't work, they'll go farther. They'll target someone in their family and take them out and say, "You're next if you don't do what we say," or they'll say they'll take their kids and they'll hold their kids, you know. So they
Oof.
have no qualms about doing
No.
that.
So how are
Well,
you?
one of the big ways that we did in France is with the French, when we wanted the French to vote certain ways, they would go in. We flew two missions into France. They went in and they took all the money out of one of the politicians' accounts. Told him if he didn't vote the way they wanted, that he'd never see his money again. So he came back and did what they said. So we flew him back in, and they hacked into the bank and put the money back into his account. That was before the internet, so they couldn't do it over the internet. They had to the way they had to do it was quite unique. They had to get to the guy, the man who actually ran the systems in the bank. They had to hack into his phone connection into the systems whenever it would go down. And so they hacked in, got him, they copied his codes and went in, and it was pretty amazing. This nerd team that we took in, they did
The nerd But as far as you're talking about intimidating before elections and so on. I've seen that, the train bombings here in Spain, in Madrid. You had There was an assassination in Holland of a politician just 2 days before the elections. There were an assassination in Sweden just 2 days before the election about they were trying to force Sweden into taking on the euro and so on. Are these coincidences that
Not normally.
no
I no. Too synchronized to be coincidence.
exactly that's my total approach as well. Would you know anything about the assassination of the Swedish foreign minister Anna Lindh? She was
No, only
she
Olof Palme.
okay. Yeah, because no, she was stabbed just 2 days before. It was actually on, she died on 9/11, 2000. Yeah. What is this thing about these dates and the place that these assassinations occur? They're very often in sort of some kind of ritualistic, geometric, numerological, I can't even say it, numerological thing. What is that?
I have no idea. We get a tasking down and have a date that they want it done on,
Yeah.
or that there's some a lot of times there weren't dates, that was just left open. So
Okay.
the problem is, if we're given a specific date, there are too many things that can go wrong. So we really didn't, back in those days, we weren't tasked by a specific date or having it done on a particular day, but they did want it done quickly. There were a few that had to be on a particular day, but. And I attributed those to the schedule of the target. So,
When you were in this world, did you ever question what you were doing?
always I've turned down missions,
Yeah.
only because I didn't feel it was in our best interest to do it, and I wouldn't do it. But there were other units, other commanders, and the other OSGs, and they took it up and go, "Look, you know, there's a $250,000 sitting for you and your team." For each mission you do. So you just
So,
The team commander walk in. I could walk into the bank, pull out $250,000, and pay the men, or women, or whoever, 50,000 each.
is there a lot of submissions as well?
I'm sorry, you broke up.
Is there a lot of women involved in these type of missions as well?
Depending on the mission, there are women involved, yes.
Yeah. So, Chip, once again, it's been an immense pleasure just saying hello to you. And the way you see the future, is that something you want to share?
Well, I see the cabal and the corporations have come a long way, but they have a lot more work to do. And if we can stay aware, if we can grow awareness, and that's the whole idea of me being on the radio, and I'm hoping you being on the radio just to help grow awareness, I think that they'll be very hard pressed to succeed in what they want to do.
Yeah, this is optimistic. I feel we live at such extreme times. I mean, it's so black, and but at the same time, it's so there's such an awakening going on as well. So, well, it's the thing is that we have absolutely no idea what's going to happen. So, might as well stay positive.
That's right, and I have property away from here just in case, so
You've got property away. Well, I've got sod all, so nowhere to go. Anyway, Chip,
Well, there's always Columbia. You're welcome down, Ole.
that sounds amazing. That sounds amazing. And I just want to thank you for your, I would say, incredible courage to stand up against these people. I mean, and these forces, you who know them in detail and know what they're capable of. That you have done what you have done, I salute you big time. And now I just really want to say the courage that you are showing is an incredible inspiration for other people. And I hope an inspiration also for people who are in a situation where they feel the need of stepping forward as whistleblowers, going out in the open, exposing what they're being part of. You are like a leading star, to these type of people. And
Well, they have my website to come to at wikiarmy.com or at chiptatum.com. I'll be doing a radio show, answering questions, doing live call-ins in 2 weeks. I start that every Monday night. So I'm hoping to get word out there and give people the opportunity to talk to me. Send me any information you have if you see something wrong, and I'll try to get it in the hands of the right people.
sounds amazing. Is there any way we can support you? Is there any need you help? No, any help you need?
No, not really. I'd rather you guys spend your time and your efforts in learning and doing what you need to do to keep your local area in place. I tell you what I'd love to do is I'd love to get the Wiki Army grown so that we have entities all over the world, and then we have little established pods of the Wiki Army, where we have access to the website and post in real time information and chat rooms and everything where we can talk. So I'm hoping to get that all into place for us.
Sounds great. So the thing is, for people who wants to make a difference, is to join you through these mediums.
That's what I would say. Yeah, that's the best way I know with technology is just come in and ask for a username and password. You can sign up right on wikiarmy.com. Or you can come to chiptatum.com and just email me there on the contact, and I'll give them information.
Okay.
Okay. And with that, I need to run.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much, Chip, and I'll talk to you soon.